Welcome to Discoville, where we discuss both Star Trek Discovery and The Orville here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we take an in-depth look at each of these shows and discover that both of them can coexist in today's fandom as they introduce us to fresh, new, and exciting stories, characters, galactic destinations, and so much more. Of course, I'm Kyle. I'm sitting in the captain's chair once again. I'm feeling kind of Pike-like at this point. I'm sitting in the chair so much. It's really nice, I gotta say. But I don't think I probably rock the outfit as nice as Pike does. I'm just saying. But I cannot fly the Discoville alone. However, once again, Amy is off to some pleasure planet on vacation yet again. And Kevin will give a little bit of a break too. He is on a moving furlough as he is getting ready for his move to the West Coast side of the Federation base. So, that can keep you busy. However, as always, I know I can count on Science Officer Extraordinaire. And you know what? She's an ace on the phasers, too. So Haley Stoddard is here on the Discoville.
I am back as always, as usual. Science Officer, we've got to be at our post. There's no slack in. I know that Kevin is working on his reassignment, so we'll give him that. But Amy, I'm calling you out. You're slacking on your post, man.
Yeah, I think we need to figure out a proper punishment.
We'll agonizer booth. I think that's too extreme.
Maybe watching the original Star Trek film in a continuous loop for 24 hours.
Oh, TMP's not that bad. If we want to torture her, make her watch Aquiel. Ooh, and the children shall lead.
Oh, there we go. That's done. 24-hour loop. Amy, sorry. You're just in for it now. So with that, now that we've figured out Amy's punishment, Kevin, he's relocating, but let's open up some hailing frequencies and tell you where you can find not only Discoville, but all the great shows of the Fandom Podcast Network. And it all starts on our homepage at fpnet.podbean.com. Of course, you can also use the Podbean app on your tricorders and mobile devices. Just search for the Fandom Podcast Network. And of course, you can also find us now on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play for your Android device users, and of course, on Spotify. You can follow us on social media, both on Twitter and Instagram, at Discoville Pod. Visit the Fandom Podcast Network Facebook page and give us a like. And also join the Discoville Facebook page group. We'd love to have you there. We're dropping all kinds of knowledge. Star Trek stuff is coming left and right. I'm sure Orville news is going to start flowing now that we know we have season 3. So exciting times. Of course, if you want to hail us directly, too, you can email us at discovillepodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on our individual social medias. For me, Kyle, you can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Haley, where can people find you not only on social media, but on those other subspace signals you put out there?
You can find me on Twitter. I am at Trekkie01D. And you can also listen to me over on Trek FM, over on Standard Orbit, where I talk about the original series. It's really fun and exciting.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And of course, you are the rock star of podcasting. So we know
thank
that.
Thank you.
And of course, you can find Kevin on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. And you can find Amy when she's either not off at a wine testing or getting a stone massage. Yes, we're calling you out, Amy. And Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. And of course, you can also listen to all her other great podcasts, from The Edge to Postcards from the Edge to Earl Grey, all on Trek FM. You know what? She's a busy lady, but you know what? Make a little time for us, Amy. Come on now. She's going to kill me. Yeah, I'm thinking one more absence. Helena left in a room with Helena and a paper cutter. What do you think?
Yeah.
She'll understand that threat now. So
she will.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'd want to, especially with if she's got some duct tape as well.
Yeah, no, just not good combinations. But two, if you want to wear the gear of Discoville, you can always visit our TeePublic store at teepublic.com and search either Discoville or Fandom Podcast Network, and you find logos not only for Discoville, but all the great shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network. You can get it on t-shirts, you can get it on mugs, you can get it on hoodies. We've got all kinds of great things over there. And of course, you know what? We love reviews, especially on iTunes, which is now Apple Podcasts. We love those 5-star reviews, of course, but we love the feedback in general because we always want to know what we can improve on to give you the best show possible. Now, before we get started with this week's mission, we're going to take a look ahead because we got something very special for the next episode of Discoville. I don't know if I'm going to allow Kevin and Amy to be on it just because I think it's fitting punishment, but we are going to be doing a look back at the Orville season 2 in its entirety, Haley. We're going to talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, and we're also going to talk, now that we know we have season 3 coming, what we're hoping to look forward to in season 3. I know you have a lot of things that you really liked about season 2 of the Orville, but I know there's probably some ideas you'd like to see executed in season 3 as well.
Yeah, possibly. I think there's some really great stuff that they've started in season 2 that we can definitely build on for the next one. So it'll be really fun and interesting, and I'm excited.
Yes, I am very excited. Of course, that also makes us take a look back at last episode of Discoville, where we covered the season finale of the Orville season 2, The Road Not Taken, as the crew must contend with the disastrous fallout from Kelly's decision. We got some pretty deep conversation going in that episode, Haley.
Yeah, we definitely did. I think that was a very well-executed episode, and definitely shows you that you should not mess with the timeline.
Don't step on the butterfly. Don't mess with the timeline. You know, it just leads to bad things. And it, you know,
yeah,
I will still say this. I still contend, I don't know if that felt like a real season finale to me.
I still agree with you on that, very much for sure. Again, I think it's just because there was not that last little glimpse of them on the Orville back in the proper timeline that really just kind of left me a little bit off.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure, but it's a good episode. Go back, listen to it. Let's know your opinions on what you think of that. But without further ado, let's get to the main topic of this week's Discoville, and that is Discovery Season 2, Episode 11, Perpetual Infinity. So let's head on into the Officer's Lounge. So we're going to be talking Episode 11. We've only got a few episodes left of the season of Discovery to cover. Short synopsis of this: Burnham receives the reunion she's been longing for, but it doesn't go quite as she imagined. Meanwhile, Giorgio and Tyler sense a disturbing change in Leland. You think?
Yeah.
It could be some needles involved. Pointy things might be involved. I'm just saying. Haley, would you like to go to the science station and give us a little bit more in-depth synopsis of this episode?
Of course I would. In Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 11, Perpetual Infinity, Burnham wakes up in sickbay, desperate in the hope that who she saw as the Red Angel wasn't true and that the Red Angel is truly her. Her hope was quickly dashed when it was confirmed that the Red Angel is her mom, Dr. Gabriel Burnham. Burnham wants to immediately go back down and talk with her mom, but Pike tells her no, for some very valid reasons, of course. Realizing that Burnham needs something to do, he gives her the task of going through her mom's journal to learn why Dr. Burnham has been jumping through time only to be pulled back to the distant future when all sentient life is destroyed. Throughout the episode, Burnham and Spock do a lot more reconciliation, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Culber gives some great insight into how her mom must be feeling with everything she's gone through in the last 20 years of linear time. In the process, we learn a bit more about what Culber is going through as he moves through his trauma. Dr. Burnham lets it be known her reasons for bringing the sphere directly into the path of Discovery. All of the data that the sphere transferred to Discovery needs to be destroyed before Control can assimilate it. It's that knowledge that Control eventually acquired that leads to the destruction of all sentient life. Dr. Burnham's entire mission has been to destroy it. As all of this is happening, Control tells Leland struggle is pointless before injecting him with nanites or some similar tech and taking control, no pun intended, of his body. Once Control is inside of Leland, it orders Section 31 to intercept the data that is being downloaded to Dr. Burnham to destroy, making up some reasons as to why it is necessary. Giorgio and Tyler become suspicious, thank goodness. Eventually, they figure out that Leland is no longer Leland. Control and Giorgio get into some impressive hand-to-hand combat. Control tries to kill Tyler as Tyler is trying to stop the data transfer. Dr. Burnham is pulled out of the linear present time without the Red Angel suit after she and Burnham got a very touching moment finally. I think, holy moly, this episode.
Yeah, there was a lot. There was a lot to digest in this episode, and I really think, because we know what's coming in the next episode, which is very Pike centric, and I know you're really looking forward to probably talking about that episode, Haley. But
except
I thought this
episode going to be gone.
This episode really was kind of a great precursor into the season finale. But I get a little trivia on this episode. A couple of fun things. First of all, the idea that Michael's mother is tethered to a point in time is similar to DS9's The Visitor, also involving a dead parent who returns, in which Sisko is temporarily tethered to his son, Jake. I found that very interesting, and I hadn't actually thought of that. And it's been a while since I've watched DS9. I know you did a rewatch here recently, didn't you, Haley?
Yeah, I did a rewatch for the anniversary, and I didn't even think about that either. But that is really, really interesting. That gives you something to think about.
Now, and something that to me might seem a little screwy, but you know, it's Star Trek. Michael Burnham's father is played by Sonequa Martin-Green's real life husband, Kenrick Green. I would be confused.
I was going to say, it might be one of those, like, my father is my brother, my kind of story. run! Banjos are playing. Yeah, so I thought that was really neat, though, to kind of pull him in those little flashbacks to her childhood. So I kind of thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I did too. So, Haley, I want to ask, what were your first reactions to this episode? Because there was a lot going on in this episode and some really big things. I know for me, one of the biggest things was kind of really finally seeing for the first time a look at the Burnham family.
Yeah. My first reaction to this was really quite interesting. I found the episode really well done. I like that we were finally getting to have some of this closure to a lot of the plot threads that we've had all season thus far. And it kind of really started this steamroll train of like, holy buckets, there is a lot going on and there's a lot at stake in this. And I liked that we did finally kind of understand a little bit more of what was going on with the Burnham family, but then also I like that we kind of are getting some closure with Colbert and he's kind of understanding what he needs to do.
Yeah, I think that was a big thing. I think for me, for this episode, it was the fact that we have these great moments between Michael and her mother, especially even if they're not on screen together, which when she's going through her mother's logs from the Red Angel suit, which I still love the design of that suit. That suit is so perfect looking.
Definitely.
But I also really enjoyed the story with Control and finally kind of that coming to a head as well and really making that
one
big step and getting Tyler and Giorgio a little bit more involved on that side of things. And like you said, too, we have the moments where Colbert is starting to kind of accept everything that's happened to him and willing to get himself back into living and not just kind of this disconnected feeling we have. And I thought that was some great moments in this. But I want to focus kind of right now on some guest stars we had. And of course, we're mainly going to be talking about the Burnham family stuff. We had Sonja Shaw as Dr. Gabriel Burnham. And of course, Kenrick Green as Mike Burnham. Now, I don't think we would have thought watching season one, this is the direction the Burnham family would have gone.
No, definitely not. And you can understand why she's in denial that her parents worked for Section 31, because she was a kid and they weren't obviously telling her everything as to why they were on that planet. It was really interesting, but I did like it. I loved the dynamic of the three of them, and that Klingon ship was really awesome. Not gonna lie.
That was a great opening, and I love seeing that ship. And I really thought Sonja Shaw did a great performance as Dr. Gabriel Burnham. And you know what I found real interesting is she looks like she could be related to Sonequa Martin-Green. And I think that really helped with things as well.
Yeah, I think this show has done really good job on casting. I think I said it last episode. They appreciate the nuances, and I like that because I noticed those small little nuances, and a lot of other fans of the show, we notice those little details, and if there's something a little wonky, we're like, I don't know about that. So I appreciate that they really are doing a very good job in selecting who are playing these characters.
Yeah, no, and I think that's been one of the strongest points of Discovery in that is picking the right actors to play these characters. I also think, too, as part of this plot was I really thought that finding out about her parents and especially how her mother is really got us an insight to Burnham we really haven't had before. And I really liked seeing that side of it. And again, another amazing performance from Sonequa Martin-Green in this aspect as well.
Yeah, you could see her pain and her anguish and her confusion at first that it was her mom, because she had to have thought it was, but then just clearly thought she was delusional. And that joy and that elation at realizing your mom is not actually dead, and the craziness of maybe my dad's still alive too, and then, you know, wanting to talk to her mom, but then that mom doesn't want to talk to her. And I can't imagine what that would be like to know that you cannot, that you're saying, no, I'm not going to talk to my kid. I don't want to talk to her after not seeing her for 20 years. I couldn't even imagine doing that. Like, I'm a mom and there's no way that I'd be like, oh, I've been gone for 20 some odd years and I don't want to talk to you. It's just insane. And so I felt for Burnham in that whole moment of like, my mom doesn't want to talk to me, but she's my mom. How could she not want to talk to me?
And that, I think that was they played that very smart, because here's her mom too, trying to prevent messing with the timelines and messing mm-hmm. with things that she's already been trying to do. And I love the insight we got from these log entries we had, and especially kind of the feeling of aloneness that Dr. Burnham had dealt with, being stuck in this 950 and just being tethered back constantly as she's trying to prevent this horrific thing from happening, and it can't, and every time, and she's failing. And I can't even imagine like the mental stress that would put the average person under. And here, I think it shows just how strong a character that Dr. Burnham is to be still kind of have a sense of sanity under all of this.
Yeah. I can't even imagine. 'Cause I mean, we can talk about it. You know, she only meant to jump an hour back in time, not into the future. So clearly they were still not quite ready to use this suit and didn't understand all the nuances of the time crystals and how this suit was supposed to work. So I can't imagine realizing, oh, I've jumped this far in the future and everything's gone. Like, just that utter devastation would just be really shocking to your system, not just emotionally, but physically in every single way. And then to try and fix it and then constantly just going back to that same time. And I think in the episode, she says that she's done 271 jumps. So each time she goes back, it's still the same. And I couldn't even imagine. And that lends to, I get why she did not want to talk to Burnham, to her daughter, because like you said, she doesn't want to mess with the timeline. But at the same time, she says that she's already seen her daughter die numerous times. And, you know, to see her alive and know that she's going to still see her die who knows how many more times, I don't think I could do that. Even if I wasn't a mom.
Yeah, I don't see how either. And then think about, you add in the aspect of one of the last things she sees is her husband getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just so much. And, you know, I understand Kendrick Green, who played Mike Burnham, wasn't in this episode that long, but I thought he really made, as far as Burnham's family, you see his influence even on a young Michael Burnham with the type of character he is, just in those few moments where he's fighting off the Klingons that are invading and trying to protect this time crystal and how important that is, and just sacrificing himself not only for his wife, but his daughter as well.
Yeah. Definitely. So, I totally agree.
I think it also, like I said, it really gives us an insight to Michael Burnham. And I think it gives, what I liked about it was just, you see more of her human side and where she's come from. We've had so much focus on her Vulcan family and her connections with Spock. And now to see this, it really, I think, also strengthens the relationship between her and Spock, because Spock is seeing what she's going through, seeing her human family now. And you actually see some empathy almost from Spock in this case as well.
A little bit. And, you know, this is, I've said before, when you go and you watch the original series and you watch it from the cage forward and watch every single episode, and even in the films, Spock's character very much changes. And it's because he was in that trying to explore what part of himself he wanted to have as his presentation. And did he want to embrace his human parts and display emotions and feelings? Or did he want to fully embrace his Vulcan side, or a combination of the two? And so this version of Spock in Discovery, I think, very much is showing that same thing that we see in those first few episodes of the original series with Spock's character, this exploration of, like, because if you watch it, he gets much more stoic and logical and sciencey and more Vulcan-y as the series progresses. But early on, he still isn't quite that person. So I love that they've tied that in to the Spock we get in Discovery. And I think that's why he kind of shows a little bit more of emotions in this.
Yeah, no, I agree. And again, you know what? I have loved Ethan Peck's portrayal of Spock. I think he's maybe even had a harder portrayal of Spock than maybe even Zachary Quinto had. Because Zachary Quinto was definitely portraying Spock in a way where we kind of already knew Spock. And we know. And Ethan Peck's like adding to the Spock mythos here. And in a time where we don't know what everything is with Spock. And I think he's handled it quite brilliantly and found a real interesting balance to how he's handled Spock.
Definitely. So one thing I wanted to point out that I found really interesting is that Dr. Burnham doesn't know about the seven signals.
Yeah, I think that was a big thing, and it makes things even more interesting, especially with what we know is coming in.
Yeah. So, I mean, we obviously know now, but at the time it was like, well, then who's been doing it? Like, it left you with that question. There was still that one remaining question. We get a lot answered with the Red Angel. We understand why we've been seeing the Red Angel. We understand, you know, some of the events that have been going on, why Discovery encountered that sphere and whatnot. But then you're like, well, wait, if she's not the one doing these signals, then where is this coming from? And who's doing it and why? And so that was something I thought was really neat. And I liked that, you know, she understood that somehow Spock was the only person who could understand her.
Yeah. And
that was interesting.
Yeah. Well, and because Spock doesn't have the emotional reaction that Burnham would have as well, that Michael would have as well. But yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think that was something Discovery did very well this season, was keep their mystery open until it was time to close it. Whereas I think that was something they had a problem with in the season one, was, you know, every mystery was another mystery. And they wouldn't necessarily answer the questions of the first mystery before they dove into the second mystery. So I think the writing crew really learned that from season one and really improved upon that in season two. But that leads us into what was kind of the B plot of this episode, and that is Control finally really makes its move. And we get the full idea of mechanisms that Control is doing and what it's trying to accomplish in getting the spear data to make itself basically the ultimate intelligence of the universe, and what that's going to lead to decide. And I love the fact that it's done in a way where we have Leland, who I think we've all known for a while, it was not going to end well for him. But using Tyler and Giorgio as kind of the people who are confronting Control, with everybody else occupied with the Red Angel, it's like, wait a minute, we still have this other problem. Let's not forget about this. And it's them working together, even though they don't really trust each other that much. I mean, and it made for some great moments. And Michelle Yeoh was the glue that held this part of it together. She was great in this episode.
She definitely was. And Holy moly. I bloody scary. Control is scary. It's interesting that this computer program, because that's what it is at this point. It's a computer program that's gaining sentience, is really paranoid. It's really interesting that we've got this, we're anthropomorphizing this computer program and giving it paranoia, that it thinks that it's better than all sentient life, and that sentient life down to the smallest microorganism is totally not worth it, and it should all be destroyed, and that this program should be the only thing left. It's terrifying, I tell you, because it goes into that stigma of this AI, and it's very sci-fi storyline where the AI takes over and takes control, and then, you know, we're the slaves instead. And so that's what the fear it plays on is really, really interesting. So it was really quite terrifying, actually, for me. Yeah.
All I'm going to say is syringes of nanites, I'm staying far away from. That just doesn't sound fun. It looks painful. It is not how I'd wish on anybody, and it was not good for Leland.
Well, so with that, I want to ask you. So Control tells Leland that he's going to be the first, like, human body taken over, right? Mm-hmm. How did Control get him in that device and strapped in, like, that chair thing to inject him if they've never controlled a body before?
I think it's just influence and trickery. And I think that's the thing. See, what you talk about is how scary Control is. Control's ability to manipulate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's scary about it. And then getting in there and then basically using nanites to overwrite Leland's brain to take control. I think, you know, and you wonder, and they don't really address it, but you think about, what if Leland's conscience was still there? Like, he's the puppet. He's trapped inside his own puppet.
Mm-hmm.
Just the thoughts of that are scary enough alone, but I also love the teaming up of Giorgio and Tyler in this episode and how they handled it, because they were like, we're not even going to get Pike involved. We're not going to get we're doing this our way, and to make sure it gets handled. And in the meantime, we've had this side spot of this spear and its data kind of floating there all season. And we really now get a full understanding of, like, this is, again, bringing the puzzle pieces together here. And I think, again, I go back, and this is one of the things I think the writing staff has done very well this season compared to season one, is putting the puzzle together much better than how they handled it in season one.
Definitely. And it's really interesting that you notice that, and you can kind of pick up on it before anybody says anything or acts on it, that Tyler and Giorgio are like, something is up with Leland and he's not quite himself. I mean, granted, he was always a little bit shady anyway, and you weren't quite sure what he was intending. But this episode, you're just like, yeah, he's not himself. And I liked that subtle notice of, okay, something's up with him. And that fight scene with Giorgio and quote-unquote Leland was incredibly well choreographed. I loved that scene when they were fighting and whatnot. One thing I wanted to ask about was, how do you think that Leland knew that Discovery was wanting to send the data into the future with the suit? Because at this point, we know that Tyler is no longer wanting to help Section 31 get the data, because they'd already asked for it, you know, because I think it was in this episode that Leland, air quotes, wanted, he said, we need that data. How did he know?
I think it's probably, and that's one of the things they didn't answer, but I think it's got to go back to a couple episodes ago when Control took control of the Ensign. And I'm blanking on her name right at the moment.
Oh, Arium?
Arium. And probably left some subroutines in there or something that allowed Control to access that and relay the information on to Leland there, which is just, again, Control 10 steps ahead of everybody else. And that's why It's so dangerous. But I want to ask you this too, Haley, because we've talked about it all season, and I know you haven't been a huge fan of all the Section 31 stuff this season. It's been maybe a bit too much. Do you feel like we're at this point where it's all coming together, are they force-fitting what's been happening in Section 31 into the story for the finale, or do you feel like it's more of a natural puzzle piece coming together at this point?
I think they're trying to put it in so that it makes sense. But at the same time, like, Control was made by Section 31. Even though apparently all of Starfleet used it, because again, it was this program designed to take in information and give out possibilities of outcomes, and help admirals make the best choice. I don't know if I would trust a program made by this apparent supposed CD Underground Section 31 portion of Starfleet. So yes and kind of no to your question. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think they've done a better job of integrating it as they've gone along, but I think it was very clunky at times during this season.
Oh, yeah.
And it did feel a little bit forced, but I do think in the last couple of episodes, they've done a much better job of kind of flowing it in and putting the pieces together as Control has become more involved and that's making more sense. And basically that Section 31 has been the kind of almost the tool of Control for a while now. So I think that's what's making it intriguing. And I think it's like that puzzle piece that's maybe it was had a factory miscut or something like that in the box. And you know, the piece goes there, but you kind of have to force it in a little bit. It's not that it doesn't fit. It's just, it takes a little extra effort to get it in there. And that's kind of how it feels like to me at this point.
Yeah, I can understand that. And I can see that too. I'm not big on Section 31 stuff myself. So it's been a little heavy-handed in this, and I'm really looking forward to not having it so much going forward. I know we're getting the Section 31 show, and I think that's great and awesome because it's more Trek, and the people who love the whole Section 31 idea are just going to eat it up. But I will probably refrain just because it's not my jam.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what they're going to go with that Section 31 show once this is all said and done, and we kind of figure that out. So it's gonna be very interesting. But I want to ask you: did you have any favorite scenes, quotes, or any other observations that we haven't hit on this episode, Haley?
Yeah, I like that. By the end of the episode, we very much have a coming to terms with Burnham and Spock. You know, of what they've both said to each other, what they both did to each other. Kind of forgiving each other and moving on from all of that so that they can have a better relationship going forward. One thing I wanted to point out, and I'm going to steal Amy's thunder because she's not here to do some math, but I kind of did some math. And if anybody else has a better number, you can let me know. So at the end of Project Daedalus, the previous episode, Arium had transferred 25% of the data to Control. In this episode, when they're doing the data transfer, they get another 54%. So technically, they have 79% of this data at the end of this episode, which is not a good thing.
No, that's a little too close to
100%, but it's probably enough that it could probably still do its thing if we don't stop it.
Yeah, no, that number is just a little too close for my comfort there.
Yeah. And then I think one of my favorite lines, I like science.
Yeah, that was a good one. Says, you know, I like science. It's not so much a scene, but I've come to this conclusion, Haley. I'm up for any scene of conversation between Spock and Burnham at this point. Those two have such great chemistry, and the conversation is so interesting because it goes from very logical talk to a little bit of back and forth banter to even a little bit of honest sibling rivalry almost.
Yeah, definitely. It's really fun.
And I think any scene with those two, and it even gets more interesting as we continue on. But anything with Spock and Burnham, and again, I want to go back to the Culber things and seeing him kind of find peace. It's been a very underlying storyline throughout this season. And I know we're not, I guess the word is to say we aren't fully to that conclusion yet, mm-hmm. but, we're almost there. And I really like how they've developed it kind of as an underscore in this season.
I really love it. And I appreciate it as someone who works in mental health. I love that they didn't leave it. They've gone with it and they've used it to give this character more depth and to create a character that I think a lot of people can relate to, on that level of really struggling with who am I and where am I going. I do have to agree with you, because in the opening scene, we get Wilson Cruz back in that white doctor's uniform and hot bleep. That's all I'm going to say. I will bleep myself.
I did see, and this is stealing from Subspace Signals a little bit, there were some people on Twitter who had some pictures of him. He was like on a boat or something like that. And they were both like, yeah, Wilson Cruz, somebody register him for those guns.
Yeah, don't mess with him. He definitely takes care of his physique.
Yeah, without a doubt. But you know what? Right now we're going to take a little break and then we're going to come back and have a few Subspace Signals.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. For you Highlander fans, we've got Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we cover all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater is for you movie buffs, our podcast celebrating the cult classics and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. We also have End Zone for you NFL fans, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with hosts Tom, Brandon, and Chris discussing the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. And for you Star Trek Discovery and Orville fans, we have Discoville, talking about everything Discovery and the Orville. And for you hard rock music fans, we have the Hair Metal Podcast. The Hair Metal Podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And we also have Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, where we discuss all things Doctor Who, both past and present. And our newest podcast, Lethal Mullet, our podcast celebrating action movies from the 1980s with your host, Adam P. O'Brien. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, and now on Spotify. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network, on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, and also on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at FandomPodcastNetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
So, Haley, I got to be honest with you. When I was working on the show, there wasn't a ton of news. You know, everything's been so Picard-centric. And now that we've had the trailer, things have kind of leveled out a little bit. And I'm kind of thinking, you know, the Orville doesn't really have a lot to say because they just know they got renewal. I don't think we're going to get a ton of Orville news anytime soon. And I think we're kind of kidding that maybe that Star Trek news lull, because we know Star Trek Las Vegas is about a month away now. So yeah. I don't know how much more news is going to slip out there before that and Las Vegas, unless it's news about Star Trek Las Vegas and people who are going to be there. But I thought this would be a good time to kind of review what we know about the Picard show. Obviously, we've had the trailer. We fell in love with that. I've picked up an article from Radio Times and kind of just rehashing some things. I'm just going to hit a few points here and we can just kind of discuss them. Of course, we knew that Picard began filming in April 2019. And then it's a 10-episode series, and they've already wrapped a couple of episodes, but the full series is supposed to wrap sometime about October. Still hoping for a 2019 airing. Do you think it's really going to happen, or do you think it's going to be 2020 for Picard?
I think it'll be 2019. They've got to bring out something in the interim because we do know that next year Discovery will be back. So they've got to get something in the meantime. It's slated likely to be the end of 2019, early 2020, but I don't think it'll be any later than that as far as it coming out. It'll be interesting to see how they release it. I don't think we know a whole lot if it's going to be episode a week over the 10 weeks or, you know, if they're going to release a chunk. Who knows? So I'm still fingers crossed that it comes out on my birthday.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a weekly show. I don't see them doing the Netflix, putting the whole series out like that. I think they're going to milk it out and things like that. But let's talk about some of the other people who are going to be in it. Because alongside, of course, Patrick Stewart returning, the series has so far added Merlin Starr, The Musketeers, and Hero Starr, Santiago Cabrera, which I know has a lot of hearts going pitter-patter, Haley.
A little bit, yeah. A little bit, mm-hmm.
And they've also added Michelle Hurd, who is in best known for Marvel's Daredevil, also the TV show Blindspot. They're going to be regulars alongside newcomer Evan Evagoria. We don't know exactly what characters they're playing, but Deadline is reporting that Cabrera will be a pilot of Picard's ship who's also a skillful thief, while Hurd is an intelligent officer with a powerful memory and problems with substance addiction. I find this very interesting. Picard is kind of shaping up where, you know, he might have, I don't want to say he had the crew of misfits on the Next Generation, but it sounds like they're going to give Picard the crew of misfits this time around.
Yeah, I don't think he had the crew of misfits beforehand, but he definitely kind of has an interesting crew. But I think this also speaks to the redemption part. I think he probably sees in them, because we know Picard sees in us things that we don't see in ourselves. So I think that's where it's going, is that he's bringing in people who... they made some choices that weren't so great, but he sees their greatness in them and wants to bring that out. I believe, I would have to look at her IMDb, but I believe Michelle Hurd, I know her from Law and Order. Is that correct? Do you know?
Yeah, I believe she did an episode of Law and Order as well. I know her mostly from the Daredevil series on Netflix that gotcha. She was in a few episodes on. But, you know, I'm interested in that. And then, of course, too... if both of these TOS shows are true, the Picard series is going to obviously deal with space exploration at some point. One of the big questions I know a lot of people have is, how similar to a Star Trek show will it be? And I'm kind of thinking this is going to be a whole unique experience for Star Trek. That's really my feeling on this.
I would agree with you. I think this is going to be, it's going to be Trek-esque, and but it's going to be very different than what we've seen, and I'm here for it. I think it's going to be wonderful, and I'm so excited just based on that little bit of a trailer. It's going to be really great.
Yeah, some more recent additions include the Newsroom's Allison Pill. Also for you fanboys out there, she was also in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. From Hamilton, Briones.
I think.
Yeah, and then, of course, also from a show I really like, Penny Dreadful, Harry Treadway are all set to be part of, and yet unknown roles. It's an interesting cast where you've got some newcomers, but you've got some people who have some experience but may not be fully known. It kind of does remind me of when Next Generation started, because, honestly, I remember when Next Generation first came out, I think the most known name at the time really was LeVar Burton.
Yeah, and that was the interesting part. You know, these people, they're very much synonymous with Trek now, and I think that's what Trek does. I like that we get actors that aren't necessarily super well known, but they get pulled into this, and I hope that they understand the ride that they're about to be on. Because, you know, the Star Trek fandom, we love these characters if we relate to them. And even if we don't necessarily always relate to them, even if there's a little bit that we really love about their character, they're family for life. Like, this is a big deal. And I hope that they're ready for it, because we're passionate fans.
Oh, very much so. And you know what? Here's the other thing. I think that the cast of Discovery has set the bar so high for fan relations at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have yet to hear anybody talk bad about anybody from the Discovery cast as far as how they relate with the fans and how they interact with the fans. I mean, so, yeah, guys, the bar is set a little bit higher for this. But, you know, what I really want to ask you, too, because I know we're going to be covering a lot of Picard in the coming months, and obviously when it comes out, and we've talked a lot about it in the last few weeks, but, you know, do you think that Picard is going to change a lot of people's view on Star Trek in the aspect of they're going to see a side of Star Trek they may have never seen before, and kind of opening up a world between that and the fact, you know, we're getting something different too with a lot of the Star Trek shows that are coming out. Obviously the Section 31 show is going to probably be different than any kind of Star Trek we've seen. And when we look at the animated, we've got a Star Trek comedy animated series coming out for adults. So I think it's really interesting to see how Star Trek is diversifying itself in its style of shows, which is something I think that's kind of new, because there's always been that general heartbeat through a Star Trek show. And now you see Kurtzman as he's growing this Star Trek universe out, and obviously not only with the CBS app, but with the deal that they've reached with Amazon for worldwide distribution for Star Trek things, it's really interesting to see it spread out. I'm curious for you, Haley, being such a hardcore Star Trek fan, how do you feel about this?
I am optimistic about it. I think this is something that's going to elevate the fandom as it is already. I think this is going to really strike home with fans, and not necessarily everybody, and that's okay. And that's what's great about all of these different types of Star Trek shows that we're going to be getting, is there's going to be something for everybody, but then there's also going to be people who stumble upon it and say, oh, well, this is Star Trek. And they give it a try, but it's going to be different. And they're going to say, well, I like this. Like, I think the Picard series, we're going to have more drama. There's going to be a lot of sci-fi because it is Star Trek and you can't escape it. But I think at the same time, I think it's going to be more of a heavy, dramatic kind of show than what we've seen with Star Trek before. And I am really excited about that. I think the Section 31 show, it's going to pull in those fans that really love the mystery, because it's going to be mystery and all that seedy, dark corner, back room kind of stuff that some fans really, really like. And then some people who already like that kind of show, they might give it a try and say, well, yeah, it's Star Trek and I've never really liked it, but this is my kind of stuff. I like this kind of stuff. The comedy animated series we're going to get for adults. I mean, cartoon, and it's going to be sci-fi. And how many fans are going to be like, this is awesome, this is for me? And other people are going to say, well, it's Star Trek, but it's comedy and it's animated. And I like the writers who did Rick and Morty, and I like that show. So I'm going to give it a try and I'm going to see it. And it's all about bringing in more voices, more opinions, more ideas, more diversity into the Star Trek fandom, which only elevates the fandom more and also elevates the series more, because then it's saying, okay, well, this did really well. What else can we try? And not everything's going to be a hit. There might be some misses, but I think it's just going to broaden everything and make it richer and deeper.
Yeah, and I think this is a really good time for Star Trek to be doing this and really exploring it, because if you look at a couple of things happening with some of the other huge fandoms out there, you look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which kind of just had a big crescendo with Avengers Endgame out there, even though they are moving on to their next phase, it's still kind of people aren't sure what's next. And of course, Star Wars is ending a big thing with their new movie coming out and the end of kind of the Skywalker saga. So there's a big window there that Star Trek can really slide itself back into a sense of prominence there that I don't think it's had in a while. And I really think Kurtzman, and with the fact he's surrounding himself with other people and not trying to carry the load on himself, is such a good idea. And I'm just really looking forward to seeing what else is going on. So I'm excited for all these things, and I hope that they even just remotely live up to the expectations we have for them.
Yeah. And I think they will. I think it's going to be great. And that's part of it. You know, we put in expectations, but I don't think we really should. I think we need to try and not expect it to be something, because then you're just disappointed because it's not what you think it should be, rather than saying, okay, this is going to be something different. This is going to be something new and I should give it a shot. Whether I like it or not doesn't matter. It's going to be exciting and someone's going to like it. And trying to avoid as much expectation about it as possible. It's difficult because it is Picard, and so many of us, we love this character. But at the same time, you have to say, this is not the same character that I grew up with. He is not in the same spot he was. And I've been trying to do that just because I am a TNG fan, and I'm trying to not say, okay, I know how he's going to behave, because we don't.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I think that's the great thing. Even though we're bringing back some returning character here, nobody knows what to expect. Mm-hmm. It's not the Picard we know. And I think that's what's great about all of these shows, is that we don't know quite what to expect at this point. And I think it's that sense of mystery that I think is really exciting for Star Trek, because I think that's something it's been missing for a while. And I think, you know, when Discovery came out, there was a sense of newness, but it was so drastic. I think it kind of threw people off. And I think Discovery's kind of now settled back more into something that people can feel a little bit more comfortable with. And even though we're going to talk about this more later, but it's making a big change, but I think it's going to be a change that's going to have people excited too. So
definitely.
It is a very interesting time for Trek. Obviously too, next week we're going to be back doing our Orville season 2 review. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be fun. I think we'll have the full crew back for that one. Lots of fun things out of the Orville this season, and just a show that's just improving week in and week out, Haley.
Oh, I agree. And I'm looking forward to it, as I will be away on assignment the following week.
Yeah, I might know something about that assignment. I'm just saying. But with that, I want to thank Haley for being here, manning the science station, as she always does. And with that, hailing frequencies are now closed.